Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. The next series of shows I'd like to embark upon is All Your Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, which I have spent time on years ago, but which I feel is something we need to revisit in light of the challenges in our economy. The book, All Your Worth, is by Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know about now. She is a senator from Massachusetts, the first female senator from that state. And she has been a very important person in dealing with many debt issues, credit card issues, and issues to help the middle class in particular at the governmental level in the last few years. But before that, as a writer and scholar, a professor at Harvard University. She has a number of books, and All Your Worth was written with her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi. What I will follow for the most part is her book, All Your Worth, as the textbook in this series. We ended the last show being in the savings component of the All Your Worth plan and had just discussed the component of paying off your home. Just as a reminder, you have to have done everything else in the plan that we discussed in order to really be at this point. And if you have missed this or want to review, I do suggest that you read All Your Worth by Elizabeth Warren. Essentially, you pay off your mortgage $1 at a time. You take 5% of your income, which is one quarter of your 20% for savings, and use it to pay extra on your mortgage every month. We know that the amount outstanding on your mortgage is an awfully big number, so you may think that paying a couple hundred dollars extra every month is like trying to bail out the ocean with a teaspoon. But you may be surprised just how far that little extra can go. Suppose you have a mortgage for $150,000 at 7%. Now suppose you make $50,000 a year and your income increases a little year after year. Even jobs where the income is pretty steady usually get at least a cost of living raise, so the paycheck keeps up with inflation. If you keep putting in extra 5% of your paycheck toward your mortgage, you could be mortgage-free in 15 years, or even faster, and you could save more than $100,000 in interest. Now, that's a smart move. Another area to look at when you get to this point and have the money in savings is saving for other dreams. You're paying off your home, and you're saving for your golden years. Your money worries are disappearing like yesterday's rainstorm. So now what? It's time to make your other dreams come true. Your dreams can be as heartwarming, as daring, or as goofy as you want them to be. You may be dreaming of a vacation house by the lake where you can fish and watch birds, or you may want to remodel your kitchen, or maybe install a swimming pool in the backyard. You may dream of a day when you can make a generous donation to your church, synagogue, or mosque, or help out your favorite charity. Or maybe your dreams are for your kids, medical school, lavish weddings. The point is, you should take a moment to savor your dream. Picture the sunlight reflecting on the lake while your mate proudly holds up a string of trout. Imagine your daughter, all grown up in her robe and cap, proudly accepting her diploma. Picture the kids walking down the aisle in their weddings, preparing to take their vows. The point is to put some flesh and bone on your dreams, enough so you can taste them, enough to put a grin on your face. You have earmarked 10% for retirement and 5% for paying off the mortgage early, which means that 5% of your 20% savings is still available. So what do you do with that 5%? That goes toward whatever takes your fancy. These are the fun dreams, the payoff for a lifetime of savings. You have built your security fund, and so you have enough to be safe. You have launched your retirement fund, and so your golden years are secure. You are paying off your home, and one day your life will be mortgage free. And so it's time to bring your other dreams to life. Travel or weddings, a new car or a lovely vacation. Really, it's whatever you want. Make your dreams part of your life plan today. Write down what you want and put it in your wallet, right next to your money. Put another copy in your office drawer. Then add some pictures. Take a photo of your dream house. Cut out a shot of an elegant bridal gown or a racy new car or a touching graduation picture. Get an ad for your dream vacation. When you have the image, stick a copy on your refrigerator, your computer screen, or your bathroom mirror. Make your dreams part of your reality each and every day, and every time you glimpse your dreams, be sure to smile. That is what saving is all about. Sometimes people who save their money are shown as the colorless folks, the conservative ones who don't dare. But this couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, people who save are the ones who dare to dream, the ones who have big ideas, and who make real plans to make those dreams happen. In our opinion, savers are the ones who taste life at its richest. And then you have to cultivate your savings. It's really the $10,000 question, or perhaps the $10 million question. How should you make savings grow? Maybe you already have savings in the perfect blend of mutual funds, and you just need to tweak your precious metals allocation. Then again, maybe you don't know the first thing about investing, and you're worried that it just sounds hard, or at least really, really boring. So the next section in All Your Worth is investment strategy, which will allow you to make the most of your savings without having to learn a whole new vocabulary or spend the next 10 years taking finance classes. The point is, the guidelines are very simple to follow, but incredibly powerful when put in place. Picking an investment is not so different from picking a car. There are people who love nothing more than searching for an exotic car. They get into heated arguments over the merits of the 1966 Mustang versus the 1968 Plymouth Fury. They tell stories that have punchlines like, "The manifold, can you believe it?" They dedicate their days and nights to studying muscle cars and antique cars, and maybe after all those hours, they drive something really cool. It's even possible that some of them make a little money when they happen upon something really special that they can buy for a good price. Then again, most of them lose their shirts at the repair shop. Of course, most of us are perfectly happy to buy something safe and reliable with good gas mileage and enough room for the groceries, and there is nothing wrong with that. If you are the kind of person who doesn't want to study up on compression ratios, you can still pick a car that looks nice, starts every morning, zips along the road, and gets you where you want to go. Well, investing is the same, and I'll come back to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So, investing. If you think it sounds like fun to spend all your time researching the latest financial whiz-bangs and the hottest new stocks, go right ahead. about a million TV shows and a billion books, claim to hold the secret on how to beat the market and get fabulously rich, so you will have plenty of reading to do. The best advice is that you be sure to read those books with a touch of skepticism. After all, if these people had the magic formula for creating billions, why would they tell you about it? But if you don't want to spend hours and hours learning everything there is to know about the wide world of investing, that is no excuse for staying on the sidelines. Even if you're not a trained mechanic, you still buy a car and get out there and drive. And even if you're not interested in becoming a professional grade investor, you still need to invest intelligently. According to the All Your Worth plan, there are four simple rules to sensible long-term investing. Professor Warren holds that you go to the stock market. It is the best place for long-term investing, and that there is no doubt about that. Take stock. According to Professor Warren, the stock market is the best place for long-term investing. Over the long run, the U.S. stock market has averaged nearly 12% return, a whopping 97% of 5-year periods and 100% of 10-year periods have made money. The stock market is easy to get into and easy to get out of. In short, it's hard to beat the stock market for long-term investing. Again, the emphasis is long-term. Long-term is the key. As we all know, the stock market doesn't just go up, it also goes down. So it is not a place to keep money that you might need next week. If you had to sell in a hurry, you could get badly burned if the market takes a dip. So there's a rule of thumb. The stock market is where you should keep money that you don't expect to use for at least 5 years. So, for example, your retirement fund should go in the stock market. The young child's college fund should go in the stock market at least while he is little. But your security fund should not go in the stock market because you just might need it tomorrow. The money you're saving to buy a house should not go in the stock market because you hope to use it soon. That kind of savings belongs in a nice steady bank account or a short-term CD, not in the stock market. So, a short overview, what should you put in the stock market? Your retirement fund, money for the college education programs, any money you plan to put aside for more than 5 years. And then what goes in an ordinary savings account? Your security fund, which is money for emergencies only, money to save for a down payment on a house, and any money you might need in less than 5 years. And once you're in, you try a little of everything. You may say, what stocks should I buy? The point is diversifying. You buy all of them. Yes, the movies, the dime store novels, the get rich quick, tall tales, all start with one special stock. The heroes figured out that the Zoom company was going to take off, and he bought early. The message is clear. Get the inside track on a good stock, hang on for the ride, and get out just in time. These are all great stories, but they are just another variation on whether the 1968 Pontiac Firebird was the sweetest car ever made. Serious investors know the three rules of stock buying. Diversify, diversify, diversify. Diversify is just a fancy term for putting your eggs in more than one basket. In other words, buy some of nearly every stock listed in the market. Investing in an individual stock can be risky. Suppose, for example, that the hero of the dime store novel had bought Enron stock. He wouldn't be feeling quite so smug now, would he? The smart strategy for long-term investing isn't to look for the one stock that will soar to the moon. The right strategy is to buy lots of different stocks in lots of different industries. That way, you will get some benefit if a particular stock soars, but you'll only take some loss if the CEO ends up in jail. You don't get rich overnight, but you don't get wiped out either. Best of all, economists have shown that diversification will give you the best possible return for the least amount of risk. In other words, diversification is really smart. The third point is be cheap. Now, what does that mean? That means pay as little overhead as possible. This may sound obvious, but you might be surprised by how many people let hefty brokerage fees and a host of other charges steal bites out of their nest eggs. The classic car crowd, the guys who love to sit at their computers trading their favorite stocks, is particularly prone to overpaying these kind of fees, which is another good reason to keep things simple. As for the rest of us, with a little careful shopping, we can get nice, low fees. Do you have to know a lot about the calculations of brokerage fees to be a good shopper? Hey, do you have to know how tuna is canned to know the difference between buying at $2.79 a can and $3.59 a can? No. In fact, it is even easier to compare prices and make decisions on your stock investments than it is for tuna specials. You don't even have to leave the house to do it. And how's that? You do it all with one-stop shopping. The easiest way to follow rules 1 through 3, that is, to get a diversified, low overhead investment in the stock market, is to put your money in an index fund. An index fund, also known as an index mutual fund, buys stocks from hundreds of different companies, so you get instant, no-hassle diversification. The stocks are purchased according to a preset formula, so you don't blow a bunch of money paying some high-priced specialists to sit around and dream about the next big stock. Instead, the index fund just buys a little bit of stock from all the different companies listed on the stock market and then sits back and lets the money grow. The index fund is essentially the Honda Civic of the investment world. Not too fancy, it is a good, reliable vehicle that can get most people where they want to go. The overhead fees on an index fund are typically much smaller than those for the fancier investments, so it lets you stretch your dollar as far as possible. And here's the best part. Index funds outperform roughly 70 to 80% of all other stock funds. That means your index fund will do better than the vast majority of brokers on Wall Street. So it is a really good bet, and it doesn't require you to spend a lot of time shopping. But you may not be persuaded that the index funds are right for you. You may be thinking you'd rather play the market. Well, consider what a few pretty famous investors have to say about index funds. The best way to own common stock is through an indexed mutual fund. And that was from Warren Buffett, who is a self-made billionaire. Another quote is, most individual investors would be better off in an index mutual fund. And that's from Peter Lynch, who is a legendary stock picker and vice chairman of Fidelity. Another quote is, most of the mutual fund investments I have are indexed funds. And that's Charles Schwab, founder of the Charles Schwab Corporation, and considered one of the 400 richest people in America. And a very interesting quote from Fortune magazine writer, but anonymous. By day, we write about 6 funds to buy now. By night, we invest in sensible index funds. Unfortunately, pro index fund stories don't sell magazines. And I'll come back to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Elizabeth Warren tells a story of having met a woman who was a high-powered investment broker in New York. She was stylish and fun and very successful in her field, managing more than $500 million in funds for other people. After they had visited together for a long time, Elizabeth asked her where she kept her retirement money. She giggled and lowered her voice, then said, at a low-cost index fund, but don't tell my clients. In other words, index funds come with good returns, low costs, and the recommendations of some of the smartest and successful people on Wall Street. That's hard to beat. So how do you choose an index fund? Look for an index fund that has low annual fees and includes a lot of different stocks. The most popular index funds are based on the Standard & Poor's 500 Index, which includes stock from the 500 largest companies in America. Such a fund is sometimes called just a 500 index. Together, these firms make up about 70% of the value in the entire U.S. stock market, so you get a nice broad swath of the biggest companies in America. If you want even more diversification with slightly higher fees, though, you might consider a total stock market index fund, which includes virtually the entire stock market, 5,000 or so companies. You could also opt for an index fund that includes stocks of companies based outside the U.S., which gives you the most possible diversification. Some people put most of their money in a 500 index fund, with the remainder going toward a couple of international index funds. Others can be more conservative and have a retirement fund sitting just in the 500 index fund. Regardless, the point is the index fund is the best choice. Then, where should you buy an index fund? Index funds are all the same, so you should choose the place that will give you the lowest possible overhead fees. You can get an index fund through your retirement plan or as a standalone investment. If you are shopping on your own, discount brokerages are a good place to start. You can find one online. Just hunt for the lowest fees. If you get your retirement plan through your job, you will have to choose from the list of investment options your employer gives you. If there is an index fund on the list, just sign up for it. But if there is no index fund on the list, look for the most diversified, lowest cost mutual fund you can find, which is the best way to replicate the benefits of an index fund. Also, ask your boss to add an index fund next year. Now, after having said all of this, you may be thinking, can't I just keep my money in the bank? You may still be tempted to stay out of the stock market. We have spoken of someone who earns $50,000 and diligently puts 20% of his paycheck in an index fund. In 25 years, he would have nearly $1 million. Now, suppose he was a little scared of the stock market and he decided to just play it safe and keep his money in a savings account where he would earn no more than 3%. How much would he have at the end of 25 years? $1 million? No. $500,000? Nope. Actually, he would have just $210,000. In other words, sitting on the sidelines would have cost him nearly $800,000. Can you afford to give up that much? Of course not. So just get in there and do it. Another important thing is about stock market crashes. It's all over the news. The Dow Jones is falling. The market is crashing. Brokers are jumping out of windows. What should you do? Point is, nothing. Do nothing. You may say, is this serious? The response is absolutely. The single biggest mistake you can make, other than sitting on the sidelines, is to sell when the market starts to drop. Why? A falling market is the absolute worst time to sell. Odds are you would get less return for your money since the market is down, and you would miss out on the gains when the market rebounds. Both ways, you lose. If the roller coaster ride of the stock market makes you a little dizzy, just remember that you're in this for the long haul. You are following the investment strategy recommended by some of the smartest economists and Nobel laureates in the world, and you have years and years before you'll need that money, which means there are years and years for the stock market to turn around. So just sit tight and keep on investing. But you may say, I know company XYZ will do great. Why don't I put all my money into it? They have a great product. Their profits are rising. Why not throw all your money into the stock of one company? The problem is, you're not the only one who has noticed that company XYZ has a great product. In fact, there are literally thousands upon thousands of professional investors who spend all their waking hours testing products and checking profits. Odds are they know it is a good company, and they've already bid up the price of the stock, which means that you probably won't make any more money buying XYZ stock than you would any other. Many well-respected economists believe that even the smartest, most dedicated investors are likely to lose money when they try to pick individual stocks. A quote from Professor Paul A. Samuelson from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and a Nobel laureate in economics said, "It is not easy to get rich in Las Vegas, at Churchill Downs, or at the local Merrill Lynch office." And William Bernstein, PhD, MD, and author of The Intelligent Asset Allocator, said, "The stockbroker services his clients the same way Bonnie and Clyde serviced banks." So don't put all your money in your employer's stock, no matter how optimistic you are about your company's future. Sometimes bad things happen to good companies. Remember how thousands of Enron employees got burned? They lost their jobs and their retirement accounts were wiped out because they hadn't diversified. So don't keep more than 5% of your retirement stocks in your employer's stock or any other single stock. If you're still tempted to try playing the market, remember this. Tens of thousands of smart, savvy, highly educated professional investors were taken in by Enron. If you want to hunt for the neatest stock, do that for a hobby, but don't play the market with your retirement fund. Your response may be, "But my financial advisor or broker says I should invest in XYZ." If you are feeling uncertain about your financial planning, you may want to seek the help of a professional. There's nothing wrong with getting a little expert advice, but just be careful. Financial planners and stockbrokers aren't so different from car salesmen. They make their money off getting you to buy something. You don't buy, they don't earn. Sometimes they sell you something you really need, like a retirement account. Other times, however, they try to steer you towards high-priced gizmos that yield the fastest and fattest commissions for them, not the best returns for you. Financial advisors are slick salesmen, and they can come up with some elegant reasons why the high-fee mutual fund is better than an index fund. Before you sign on the dotted line, ask your broker what his commission is. If you're not comfortable with the answer, walk out the door. And the next area we'll look at is investments to avoid. More than once, we'll meet some perfectly nice guy, a sober sort of fellow who pays the bills on time, always wears a seatbelt, and faithfully applies sunscreen. And when the topic of savings comes up, he explains that he has decided to boost his returns by putting all his money in the Mongolian land title futures. He usually smiles and says, "Getting a great return." And then the response may be, "Did this guy just arrive from Mars? He's going to lose his shirt and his stocks and undies too." In fact, there are a lot of bad ways to make investments. And we'll look at some interesting areas in the next show, talking about gold, prepaid funerals, and collectibles. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt-manageable life.